this week on Pop of Culture. We'll learn about a film festival in Evansville.
You're traveling with other people that just went through that experience with you. So we see a lot of organic conversations that pop up with people that don't even know one another about what they just saw.
And we'll talk to an artist about the reality of the business.
I did all my homework, meaning I did the deep dive, learning how the algorithm inside of the Etsy programming works. In order to garner attention, you have to run ads on Etsy. There are all kinds of things you have to do.
All that coming up on IPR.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, and by Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
From Indiana Public Radio, this is Pop of Culture. I'm Michelle Kinsey.
And I'm Kara Duquette. Coming up, Muncie artist Carrie Wright gives us a realistic perspective of what it takes to be a professional creative.
But first, we're going to learn about a film festival in Evansville. Joining us is Matt Ulm, who is here to talk about the Victory International Film Festival. Thank you so much for joining us, Matt. Appreciate it.
Thank you very much for allowing me the opportunity. You guys are actually my first media interview in this season.
Oh, I love it. That's so cool. That is so cool. So tell us about all things Victory. How did this start, Matt?
It actually was born out of another festival that we had here in Evansville called the Alhambra Theater Film Festival. Mm-hmm. And the Alhambra is another historic theater that is here in Evansville. And there was a group of people that were trying to support its renovation. And that ran its course and the festival ended. And so there was a core group of us, Roger McGarry, Josh Weiland, and I, that thought that we needed to bring another international film festival back. And so in the fall of 2018, we got together and the first festival was in September of 2019.
Awesome. So I'm guessing that Victory is another historic theater in Evansville.
It certainly is. The Victory Theater is actually a grand old movie palace. It actually began as a vaudeville palace as well.
Oh, wow.
That was built downtown in 1921. And I believe it was only the quote unquote Victory for about 5 or 6 years. And then it was bought out by Lowe's, which of course is a big theater chain. Mm-hmm. And they held on to it until the 70s. And then it became sort of a mixed use facility and began to deteriorate a little bit. And then the city and the county got together in the late 90s and renovated it. I believe they lost a few hundred seats to modernization, but it's mm-hmm. a 1900 seat theater in downtown Evansville. Our symphony plays there, and a lot of great acts will come in over the course of the year.
Oh, that's awesome. That's awesome. So how long have you been having the film festival there, the International Film Festival?
We started in 2019. We took a year off for the pandemic, of course, but this is technically our fifth year. We've only had four festivals during that time, but we're just going to gloss over the fact. And then I think we're just going to forget that COVID year.
Yes.
And move forward.
Yeah, I don't blame you. So how has the festival changed over the years, Matt?
It's actually, because of its footprint, has not changed a whole lot. But when we decided to organize it, one of the things that we love about our downtown, as is happening with a lot of communities across America, is we have a very strong Chamber of Commerce in downtown Evansville that has revitalized our downtown district. So the initial concept of it was to be a downtown walking film festival that celebrated film and our community. And because of that, we only have a certain number of large venues, so we do a smaller multi-venue for most of the festival. We've traditionally opened up in the Victory, but then we go to Encounter Church, Innovation Point, and WNIN for our smaller screening spaces for the film festival proper.
Oh, I love that idea. I love the idea that you're kind of bouncing around to different venues to check out films. That's a great idea. Well, I know that you have several categories in the International Film Festival. Can you tell us about some of those?
Certainly. We keep it pretty straightforward. So we have a feature film category, a short film category, student films for our college, elementary, high school, junior. I say elementary. I don't think we've ever gotten an elementary. We're certainly open to the idea. Kids are getting very sophisticated
with
their content creation. So if there are any elementary school students that are listening to this, either themselves or with their parents, we'd love to see you submit. But then also a Hoosier-made film category as a Hoosier Film Festival, and also having a film background myself, we want to make sure that we have a way to recognize our Hoosier filmmakers.
Oh, I love that. That's a great idea. I understand you are still taking submissions for this year's festival. How does one enter their work?
You can either go straight to our website, which is victoryiff.com, or you can skip the middleman and go to filmfreeway.com/victoryiff, and you'll learn all about the festival, you'll learn about our cash prizes, and how to submit.
And the deadline for submission is when?
Our regular deadline is May 31st. Late deadline is July 1st.
Okay. And when is the festival? And can you kind of paint the picture for me of that that weekend?
Certainly. It's going to be September 12th through the 14th, mm-hmm. which is a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. So it'll be Thursday evening, Friday evening, then all day on Saturday. We're going to have an event on Friday night that we're very happy to be hosting. One of the producers of the Blair Witch Project, Greg Hale, is actually from Henderson, Kentucky, across the river from us. So we're going to fly him back in to do a 25th anniversary screening of the Blair Witch Project on Friday the 13th.
Wow.
So he'll be
that
there.
That timing, it could not be better. Yeah.
It was actually quite excellent that that fell together. We often feel we're glad that sort of those things happen. But yes, but then the rest of it will just be films from around the world. We've had 46 submissions so far from 7 different countries. We generally get around 100, but you generally start seeing more trickle in as that regular deadline starts approaching. And then we'll go through our process of getting the best films possible to put on that slate. And we'll be showing them all day on Saturday the 14th downtown.
Wonderful. What do you think makes your film festival unique?
What has been really gratifying from the outset is the number of filmmakers from outside of our city and even outside of our state that mm-hmm. join us for this. We always have a robust slate of educational workshops and panels to present to people. And so it's nice to have those filmmakers as a resource to present that educational information, but then also just having the networking time, because part of this is to also educate our community on what film is.
Yeah.
A lot of people, I realized when we first started putting this together, the biggest question that I got from a lot of people is, what is a film festival? Hmm. And having been a film guy for so long, it hurt to hear that. And the only thing that I could come up with after a while is like, well, what if I were to tell you that I was having a hot dog festival? What would you expect to be there? And they were like, hot dogs. I was like, so a film festival, like there to be films. So it's been good for us to expose the community and working with our local arts council to bring this opportunity to our neighbors, to expose them to not only films from around the world, but just film in general.
I love that. I love that. And chances are, if you go to the film festival, you are going to see something unlike you've ever seen before. Tell us about your love of film. Do you recall the movie that started it all for you?
I mean, I grew up on movies like Airplane and Blazing Saddles. And my mother loved old like Flash Gordon serials and Topper and Citizen Kane, things like that. Yes. So it reaches so far back that I don't know if I could tell you the first thing that I saw that really embedded me in that love of film. People ask me all the time, what's your favorite film? And I usually have to break it down by genre because can't pick just one as my tip top.
Sure. Absolutely. I totally get that. And when you said Airplane, that is Airplane and The Jerk are probably the two movies that for the longest time they were the most quoted. I mean, I could always be counted on for a hat, a brooch, a pterodactyl. Yeah.
It's interesting to me, too, when you talk to younger people at the festival, and I am kind of a Rolodex of those kinds of quips and quotes, mm-hmm. and I will trot something out and they'll be like, What is that? And I love being able to say that is from Airplane. And if you haven't seen it, you don't know comedy.
Yeah, absolutely right. Absolutely right. So what do you hope visitors to the film festival get out of the experience?
I think the thing that we have always wanted for people is to just have a very enjoyable time. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, I believe, especially since they've start putting in these large Barca loungers into our local Cineplexes, which I love, but it adds even more space to what was already somewhat of an insular experience. What I like about our festival is that as you leave the screening rooms to, like we said, walk to that next one, you're traveling with other people that just went through that experience with you. So we see a lot of organic conversations that pop up with people that don't even know one another about what they just saw. And so I want people to walk away with a not only a different experience on how they've seen film, but also how they express it to others.
Oh, I love that. So remind us one more time, where can they get more information on the festival? What are the dates and anything else you want people to know before they get in the car and drive down to Evansville?
Definitely. So you can either go to victoryiff.com, which is our festival website, or filmfreeway.com/victoryiff. Both of those have a wealth of information about how to enter into the festival, but also how to get your tickets for the festival. As far as what I would want people to know is Evansville is a very welcoming community. We've gotten a lot of feedback from those filmmakers that have joined us from all other places just to say how unique of a downtown we have and how special of an experience that it was for them. And I would just hope that people will come join us and enjoy a lot of great film from all over the globe.
Wonderful. Matt, thank you so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
Thank you very much.
This is Pop of Culture. I'm Kara Duquette.
And I'm Michelle Kinsey. We're going to take some time now to chat with local silk artist Carrie Wright. Carrie, thank you for joining us on Pop of Culture.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
Well, tell us a little bit about your art journey. When did it all begin for you?
Well, at birth, like it does for all of us. I've always been a creative person, and I grew up way out in the country in northern Delaware County, surrounded by cornfields with a west-facing bedroom window. So every sunset lit up my bedroom in bright orange. Orange is still my favorite color, by the way.
I love orange.
So I was just surrounded by the beauty of nature, enough darkness at night to see all of the stars in the sky. It was just a really a magical way to grow up, and grew up with creative people in my life, people who worked with their hands. My mom sewed many, many things for me growing up, including quilts for my bed and quilts that I still have to this day, garments, you know, just special things. So being creative was just part of the air that I breathed. I didn't become a professional artist until, realistically, until 2018. That's not to say that that's when I started silk painting, but I did not throw my hat in the ring and throw caution to the wind to take that big leap of faith until 2018. And that really happened as a result of having explored every other avenue in life that was completely unfulfilling and being thoroughly convinced that I would never be happy if I didn't try.
Oh,
you get to a certain age where fear of failure falls off. I'd been very humbled by life. I'm not afraid for people to see me fail miserably. You know, I just don't have any pride about that anymore. And there's nothing to lose and everything to gain by trying. And I haven't looked back.
Wow. I'm sure there are a lot of people out there that are relating to what you're saying right now. So tell me a little bit about how you did it. Once you decided, this is it, I have to do this, or else I'm going to regret it for the rest of my life. I'm jumping in head first. How did you do it?
The first thing, and I think the most important thing to mention, is that at the time, and still to this day, actually, my husband had enough income that my art career, there was no pressure on my art career to pay our bills. That was covered by the work that he was doing. And we live very, very small. And that is my first point of advice for all artists who want to be professional artists, is you need to be prepared to live very, very small. Mm-hmm. So don't buy brand new flashy cars and don't buy the biggest house in the neighborhood and don't think you're going to go on vacation every year because you're not. And, you know, you have to learn how to be content in small circumstances and mm-hmm. humble means. And, you know, a dollar can go a really long way in Muncie.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the first way that I did it, was I did not have financial pressure on my art to immediately start earning a living and paying my bills. The second thing that I did was first to start an Etsy shop, which only lasted about 3 months. But being on Etsy allowed me to gauge interest in what I was making, which at the time was silk painted scarves, mm-hmm. because that's the easiest product to create as a silk painter. And I did all my homework, meaning I did the deep dive, learning how the algorithm inside of the Etsy programming works. Mm-hmm. In order to garner attention, you have to run ads on Etsy. There are all kinds of things you have to do to make Etsy show your products to the right people. And I did all that. And I quickly sold everything that I made, which is not saying a lot because I only had 3 scarves. And so I you know, it was a little test case.
Yeah.
I kept painting. And the second point is you have to work really hard. So it's important that you love what you're doing.
Yes.
And that you're passionate about the process, not the outcome.
Mm-hmm.
Because you have to be willing to work and work and work and work with no results in terms of applause or sales or visibility or likes on Facebook or followers or anything like that. You have to love the work,
mm-hmm.
and you have to be willing to work a lot harder than what you see people with a 9-to-5 job working. And you're working like that because you love what you're doing.
Right.
Right. And if you don't love working that hard as an artist, you might want to rethink it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. But you did start seeing some results, right?
I did. Mm-hmm. I sold the first 3 scarves that I posted within a week.
Mm-hmm.
I took a big step back and thought, well, okay, this might just be early success, but this might be all I need to know. So I quickly spent the money from what I had made off of those 3 scarves. Those 3 scarves paid for a website.
Yeah.
And developed my own website on Wix. There are lots of great website builder tools mm-hmm. that if you have an ounce of creativity, you should be able to. I'm sorry for all those website builders out there who get paid to do this, but as a creative person, you ought to be able to at least throw together a decent enough e-commerce website for yourself that you can start selling your own things so that you're not paying Etsy all the fees.
Mm-hmm.
And it's important too, to build your own following, build yourself a local following, make sure that you're not giving your clients away to, you know, all the other people that are on Etsy with you. And so I very quickly started my own website, and that became the long uphill climb because I did not have sales after that. It took a long time to build the audience on the e-commerce website mm-hmm. and to start trudging up the hill of going it alone. So there was immediate, small, very micro success, but it was a drop in the bucket to keep me encouraged and to keep me swinging for the fences.
Yeah, I don't think people, and thank you for sharing that, because I don't think people really realize that doing the art is one thing, but then there's also the whole business side of it. There's marketing and accounting and budgeting and all those things that have to happen mm-hmm. if you want to get your art out there and get some sort of return on your amazing and huge investment that you're putting into your art. And that's a lot when you think about it, especially for artists who may not know anything about the business side, which I'm guessing is probably you know, most artists, they're over here in the creative lane and they're like, wait, what? I have to do all of this business stuff now too?
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And it is the one big difference of what I'm thankful for in terms of my own career path is that even though I was very much unfulfilled when I was working in corporate America, there are a lot of business skills that I picked up that make me a unique artist in the sense that I have as much ease speaking to CEOs in boardrooms of Fortune 500 companies as I do sitting in my studio, not speaking for 2 days while I finish an art piece.
Yeah.
So I understand that is not most artists and that is unusual. Mm-hmm. And I'm incredibly blessed in that sense to have had that long meandering road that I did.
Yeah. Yeah. It all led you to a wonderful place. Yeah, it absolutely
yes.
did. Tell us a little bit about your studio in downtown Muncie.
In 2023, after having a successful Christmas time pop-up shop in 2022, I found the space that is directly above the caffeinery in the historic Murray Building downtown at 405 South Walnut Street, and haven't looked back. I found the space in January. I started renovations and quickly opened Valentine's Day of 2023. And it is a combination gift shop, gallery, studio space, and classroom space, not just for me, but for my husband also, mm-hmm. Dan, who is a formerly syndicated professional cartoonist and to this day is a freelance artist. The space is unique in that it's broken up in such a way internally that it's easy to see through all of the work areas so that as people walk through the door exploring the gift shop, they can easily take a peek at the art that I'm currently working mm-hmm. on, at the process of making that art. And that's an important component to me because I want the community to feel welcomed in an mm-hmm. an active art studio, and in that way to demystify the making of art, that it's not a bibbity bobbity boo kind of circumstance where we wave a magic wand and, you know, beauty comes out the other end. It's a messy process. It's a laborious process sometimes. It's a frustrating process sometimes, but I'm really big into education and community involvement and want to welcome the public, which is why I keep regular business hours. There is a small gift shop here for the purpose of helping to keep the lights on. Mm-hmm. That's my short-term business model. It helps fund my studio so that my studio gives me everything that I need in terms of the space required to do the making of what I'm trying to make, but doesn't actually cost my household budget any money because, right. again, we live very small.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So far, so good.
Yeah, that's great. And I love the idea of the classes. And it really fits that whole idea of people feeling welcome and feeling like, oh, you know, I can do this. I can do, you know, some art on my own. So talk a little bit about the classes that you offer.
I offer a silk painting for beginners class. It is a $50 one-day experience sort of a class. And it is not a paint by number, paint along with me. We all paint the same thing. Mm-hmm. I prepare the artwork on the silk ahead of time. And there are usually 6 or 7 different designs for the students to choose from. So everyone has their own project. You're working on a square, a 22-inch silk square. And everything that you're accomplishing gets accomplished the day that you come. So there's not a 4-weekend commitment or anything like that. It's just a 1-day experience. And it's fun. It's relaxing. It's very colorful. I've had a lot of people come and say, wow, this feels so good. Mm. This is so peaceful.
Yes.
And my joke is always, well, that's why I'm not on any medications. It is very peaceful.
My medication is silk painting. I love that.
That's right. Yeah.
And it has to feel good welcoming people into your studio and then seeing the joy that they get out of it, just like the joy that you get out of it.
That is an incredibly rewarding experience. And it's a human connection that I love.
Yeah.
There is a moment in every class that I'm looking for, and it always happens, where if I shut up, eventually everyone else will just kind of fall silent. And for many minutes, sometimes up to 10 or 15 minutes, no one will speak. They'll just all be working quietly at what they're doing. But everyone is doing their own thing. Everyone's using their own colors on their own design that they've chosen. Mm-hmm. It's very sunny in this space, even on a rainy day, thanks to the massive 12 gorgeous windows in here.
Yeah.
And it's a quiet human moment. There's a connection that we all make, human to human, through art as the medium, that no words are needed, and there's just reflection and quietness, and frankly it has caused happy tears for some.
Not
sad tears, but quiet, happy, thoughtful tears. And those are special moments.
Oh, I love that. I love that. And it seems like there are a lot of special moments, special opportunities in that building, because there are a lot of artists that have kind of called the Murray Building home. And I know that they're on social media now. There is an Art at the Murray Facebook page that wants to get the word out about that. And something tells me you have something to do with this social media effort. Am I right? Right, Carrie?
Yeah. Whether I wanted it or not, I'm actually secretly a hater of social media. I really would not be on social media were it not for the business, but I recognize the necessity of it. The Art at the Murray branding, if you will, for all of us in the building really came about as a result of a year of being here and all of us talking to each other saying, do you want to do First Thursday? Yes, let's do First Thursday. Mm-hmm. And trying to get the word out just by doing First Thursdays. And it finally occurred to a couple of us, why don't we just brand ourselves and try to walk behind the brand? You know, for some reason, a logo and a Facebook page, after a year of us banging the drum, trying to be open on First Thursdays, all of a sudden that logo and Facebook page have taken off.
Yes. I love it. I love the page and I love the profiles. I think it's wonderful, because I think there are a lot of people that maybe didn't, you know, venture upstairs during a First Thursday, and they kind of get a taste and can experience, you know, what's going on upstairs, so that maybe they will, you know, then on another First Thursday, walk upstairs and meet the artist. I think it's, like you said, it's just another way to welcome people into the space.
That's exactly right. Mm-hmm. And again, we can't stress enough, all of us who are artists in the building have our arms and our doors wide open, because as professional artists, we absolutely understand how off-putting and unwelcoming and mystical being an artist can seem sometimes to the outsider. And that's not our heart at all. You know, as artists, we are attempting to connect with the public, to put things out into the public space that say, here is something thoughtful or beautiful or thought-provoking or controversial even that can start a conversation in the public realm, which kind of in and of itself says we're not trying to hide what we're doing.
Right.
And so you're always, as an artist, struggling with how to get your art in front of eyeballs. And 100% of the time, you are not necessarily doing that because you are looking for buyers. Of course, you need to sell your art. Yes. That's how we make our living. But that's not the only reason we're trying to have our art seen. We all strongly believe and are passionate about the ideal that art is elevating. Just fundamentally, yes, art elevates our entire human experience. Yes. And because we are artists who have skin in the game, meaning we're paying monthly rent, mm-hmm, we are on the regular having art supplies shipped to us if we can't find them here locally, mm-hmm, we're spending our hard-earned money trying to be professionals. We feel like we also have a responsibility to find ways to welcome the public. And I can't say enough about how on board the Murray brothers, Steve and Todd Murray, who mm-hmm own Murray's Jewelers here, yes, and own the building, how wonderful they have been as landlords. In fact, we have plans for improving the lighting in the second floor foyer right outside my doors.
Yes.
Before June Arts Walk, we want to begin inviting a guest artist from the community in the tiny little gallery we'd like to create here in the second floor foyer, so that it's not just Murray building artists whose work you can see in studio, but also some other artist from the community that we welcome as a guest.
Oh, I love that. And I understand there's an open house coming up in May.
Yes, May 18th, Saturday from 12 to 3, we will have a building-wide open house. And really, we're piggybacking off of Chris Taylor, who is the certified Bob Ross instructor,
yes,
who has a space right next to my space here in the building. He's just renovated, painted, new flooring. It's a gorgeous space.
Yeah.
So the whole building now is rallying together, and we'll have a great open house with refreshments, and we'll have our doors flung open for you. Lots of art to see. Both floors will be full of art. And Chris has his own thing going on with giveaways and everything. So it's a big building event that day. And of course you can stop at the caffeinery ahead of time and get your coffee downstairs.
I love that. Sounds like the perfect way to spend an afternoon. And you could get details of all that at the Art at the Murray Facebook page. But where can people get information about you specifically, Carrie? Where's the website they need to go to?
It's very simple, carriewrightsilk.com. And if you don't know how to spell it, it's blazing in neon lights from my from my window.
It is
down
indeed.
Walnut Street.
It is indeed. Well, before we let you go, we couldn't be remiss about the Hoosier Women Artists Program and the honor you received recently. Congratulations on that. And if people are not familiar with that, tell them a little bit about the piece that was selected.
Well, thank you for mentioning that. Mm-hmm. It's one of those huge honors that makes you blush, and you know, shucks, let's not talk about it. I was incredibly honored. The piece is titled 177 Pieces in My Dream, and it's mostly a prismatic piece of art, mm-hmm, but it's called 177 pieces because there are 177 tiny little pieces that have been,
wow,
of hand-painted silk from my last 16 years of silk painting that have been collaged together in a piece that's roughly about 24 by 36 inches total. That's then machine stitched to watercolor paper so that it can be mounted up for framing. And it's currently hanging in the governor's residence, because First Lady Janet Holcomb chose it as the single piece that she wanted this year to have hanging in her office. So it's very humbling. I'm honored.
Well,
definitely honored.
Yeah, I'm not surprised. I'll say that. So thank you so much, Carrie, for joining us again. Congratulations on the honor, and very excited to see what Art at the Murray has in store for us in the future.
Us too. Thank you so much, Michelle. I really appreciate it.
Mm-hmm. I'm Michelle Kinsey.
And I'm Kara Duquette. It's time to ask another local artist what they're working on.
Deborah Ginthart-Dragoo, a self-described ecologically correct wall art and jewelry artist and poet, is in the house. Welcome, Deborah. Tell us, what are you working on?
I'm currently working on my feature art exhibit for Cornerstone Center for the Arts for the month of May. And the title is Found Fiber, Found Objects, Yarn Bombing, Tactile and Telling.
We need more info on that. We need to hear more about that, Deborah. Yeah. So how did all of this come about? How did this exhibit come about?
Well, I've been knitting for several years, and I just love the yarns, the feel, the tactile sensations. So every time I go to a yard sale, thrift store, whatever, if I see an afghan or, you know, like a little blanket that a sweet old lady has spent hours on and lots of money on the yarn, then I just collect it. Because I know from personal experience how long it took, you know.
Yes.
And I just want to love on them and keep them safe.
Yeah.
So I'm using all of the afghans I've collected as backdrops for this exhibit. And then I'm using some of them on the actual assemblage art pieces for the exhibit. Some of the pieces will have scarves wrapped around them, yarn animals. It just encompasses all sorts of things.
That's well, I think that is an apt description of your art in general. It encompasses all sorts of things because you have always, as long as I have known you, Deborah, you have taken things that we would often walk on by, whether it's at a thrift store or a garage sale. Let's say it's like an old painting that maybe it's not the best, or a print or some costume jewelry, things like that. And you take it and you repurpose it, you reinvent it, you give it new life. And I know that's very important to you. Why is it important to use those types of items in your work, Deborah?
This is what I gained from my mother. She had 6 children. And she made things out of things.
Yeah.
And so that really stuck with me.
Yeah.
I came home from school one day and she had painted chicken wire bright red and wove red and blue and green plaid ribbon in and out of it. And she had made a window detail out of this chicken wire for our laundry room. And I was like blown away. I was like, oh my God, that's so cool. And early on, like my display pieces, like for my jewelry or whatever, I would use chicken wire then, because you can hang earrings on them or necklaces on them or, you know.
Absolutely.
Pretty functional.
Absolutely. You're a big part of First Thursday events in downtown Muncie. Tell us about that.
Well, I've been known, people have called me the grandmother of First Thursday or the OG of First Thursday.
I love it.
So if we go back 23 years, that's when First Thursday started on Walnut Street. And then it just grew all over the downtown area. And there are events on campus, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And you are, people can find you on First Thursdays at Cornerstone, right?
Correct.
And it's you, and you kind of coordinate, you know, other artists that display their work on First Thursday. Is that right?
That's right. I curate. So the local artists or makers, creative genius people, we have lots of them.
Yes, we do.
In Muncie, they send me 4 images of what they make, create. And so that just gives me an opportunity to make certain that it's handmade, or, you know, it can be made with technology. That's, you know, we can make things now with technology. Mm-hmm. So I just want to make certain that, you know, somebody's not bringing in 350 pairs of earrings from China.
Right. Sure. I hear you. Yeah. That it has to be handcrafted. Yep.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
We should mention that First Thursdays happen every month, and they start there from 5 to 8, and everything is free. And you can walk around to all the different places downtown and at Cornerstone and other places and check out a lot of local art. What do you hope people get out of your work?
To know that we can reuse things. We can take something old and make it new and absolutely cool once again. Like, I feel like that's important. I feel like it's important to help save the landfills. That's, mm-hmm. you know, my kids were like quite young, mm-hmm. and I would stop the car real fast and pick up things at the end of people's driveways. So yes, I was one of those dumpster diving moms.
Yes.
And, you know, Emma and Peter were just like, oh my God, mom, stop. But they kind of like what I do with this stuff. So
absolutely. Well, I know you said that you don't have a lot going on, but I knew when I reached out about this feature, what are you working on? I knew you would have a bunch of stuff, Deborah. You always have a lot going on.
Well, yeah. I have like little gathered piles around me at the moment, you know, the next project.
That's right. Well, we look forward to seeing your many projects to come. Thank you so much for joining us, Deborah.
Thank you so much. I appreciate you, Michelle.
Right back.
And
at you.
Luke.
Let's take a look at the arts and culture events happening here, there, and everywhere. Are you ready, Kara?
I am.
All right, here we go. The Ball Stores exhibit is now open at Minatrista on Saturday, May 4th. May the 4th be with you. At 2 p.m., join Karen Vincent, local historian and author behind Ball Stores East Central Indiana's Shopping Center, as she leads a discussion through Minatrista's Ball Stores exhibition. Take a trip down memory lane to the vibrant era of downtown department store shopping, uncover fascinating tales from Ball Stores, and discover her process of transforming research and writing into a buzzworthy book that has captivated our region. Minatrista.net is the place to go for more info.
I'll tell you, top of mind for me right now is
do you know what I'm talking about?
It's time for Ball State to graduate.
Yes.
Woohoo. So I thought I'd mention that because I can't stop thinking about it. The Anderson Artist Alley unveiling is set for 5 p.m. Friday, May 3rd in downtown Anderson, specifically 1118 Meridian Street. The event will begin at 5 p.m. and is open to the public. 10 new artists will be featured in the alley during 2024. All of the 2023 art will be on display at the new location at 19 West 10th Street.
Oh, that's all. And I love this idea. I love the fact that they are putting art in the alley and that it switches out every so often. So you can, if you're going to the Paramount, if you're downtown for other things, you can stroll down the alley and check out some art. I think it's a really good use of space. Really awesome. The Harmony Players will present A Gentleman's Guide to Love and Murder on Friday, May 3rd and Saturday, May 4th in the Horizon Convention Center in downtown Muncie. Showtimes are 7:30 p.m. Friday and 2 and 7:30 p.m. on Saturday. This comedy murder mystery musical, that was a mouthful, features cast and crew from Indy, Fishers, Noblesville, Marion, Muncie, and Fort Wayne. Info on the Harmony Players is available on their Facebook page.
I may have to check that out. Comedy, murder, mystery.
Musical.
Musical.
Don't forget the musical part, because to me, I was like, really? Singing about murder? I'm in.
But wait, there's more.
Yeah.
The Youth Symphony Orchestra will have its spring concert and silent auction at 3 p.m. Sunday, May 5th at Sursa Hall on the campus of Ball State University. This concert will feature the Suzuki class for 5 and 6-year-olds, the Prelude Orchestra, Overture Strings, and Intermezzo Orchestra, and the Youth Symphony Orchestra.
If you have not seen the Suzuki group play, it is one of the cutest things you will ever see. Like, their instruments are as big as they are. It's just absolutely adorable, and they are extremely talented. That is always a fun event every year. The Jack Ronald Spring Paint Out featuring plein air painters is Saturday, May 4th at Arts Place in Portland. The public exhibition and sale will be from 5 to 6 p.m. Details at myartsplace.org.
Do you think it would be weird if I just went there and watched them paint?
I think that would be fine. I think you know, probably encourage that.
Like, you don't have to paint. You can just watch the painting.
I think that's a great idea.
That would be fun. And Little Shop of Horrors is on stage at the Indiana Repertory Theater in Indianapolis through May 19th. This hilarious horticulture horror musical is a must-see. That's a mouthful.
Listen. I saw this show on opening night, and it was phenomenal. It is hilarious. All of the actors are phenomenal. Had a blast.
You heard it. So if you want to check it out, you should go look for tickets and more info at irtlive.com.
It's big. That's my favorite.
I didn't say it.
I have to, because it's my favorite line in the movie.
It's big.
All right. If you have an event you'd like to share with Pop of Culture listeners, please let us know at indianapublicradio.org/popofculture.
Pop of Culture on IPR is made possible in part by the Indiana Arts Commission, the Community Foundation of Randolph County, the National Endowment for the Arts, and by Indiana Public Broadcasting Stations.
And that's it for this week's Pop of Culture. This episode was produced by Luke Jones, who's always hanging by a thread, and hosted by me, Michelle Kinsey.
And me, Kara Duquette. Pop of Culture is a production of Indiana Public Radio on the sunny campus of Ball State University.